This episode of SolarWinds Tech Pod is brought to you by the SolarWinds APM Suite. Simplify your full-stack monitoring for hybrid, Azure, AWS, and other cloud-native IT environments, and gain valuable performance insights across user experience, applications, services, and infrastructure. Visit solarwinds.com/APM Suite.
Welcome to SolarWinds Tech Pod. I'm Patrick Hubbard, your host for today's episode. And with us today, it's a pleasure to welcome Mike Pfeiffer. He's a 20-year tech industry veteran who's worked for some of the largest technology companies in the world, including Microsoft and Amazon Web Services. He's also the host of the CloudSkills FM podcast. And in this episode, we're going to make sense out of cloud and application performance management, which most folks just call APM. And specifically, we're going to talk about how to determine which cloud provider might be best for your needs. We'll talk about some multi-cloud strategies for application delivery. We'll talk about the rise of custom applications and ultimately how tech pros can manage all of this added complexity by taking advantage of APM. Mike, it's great to have you with us.
Hey, thanks, Patrick. Super excited to be here.
Yeah, well, thanks again. Now, you have a really broad background in tech. So how did you end up focusing on cloud and particularly cloud native?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think there's a lot of people that are getting to that place now. I was luckily, you know, early on cloud because I was just really kind of paying attention. And I'm not saying that people that haven't been on cloud are not paying attention, but, you know, I'm hyper focused on what's happening in the industry because that's part of my job and what I do. So in about 2010, you know, Microsoft was pushing towards Office 365 and all of my customers were still on-prem. And I was really excited about something new because I'd love to learn and I'd love to geek out on what the new stuff is. And then I realized in that time frame, though, that, you know, not everybody was super excited about going to the cloud, but I could kind of see like that's where this is going. And when I saw, you know, the traction that Exchange Online eventually ended up getting and most of my customers moving that on-prem workload into the cloud, it just started to seem obvious to me that that's the direction this is going to end up in. And so I made the choice in like 2012 to kind of switch off of traditional infrastructure and start getting into cloud. And I was working at Microsoft in that time frame, and I ended up going over to AWS to work there. And so luckily for me, it was kind of like right place, the right time, right time in my own personal career, right time in the industry. And so I saw the value there and luckily got in early, and it's been pretty awesome ever since. So I really enjoy it. And that's kind of, you know, how I got started in it.
Well, it's a pretty unique background because it combines both Microsoft and Amazon, and you don't typically see that. So thanks again for being on the show today. And let's go ahead and get started. I think the first thing is you spend a lot of time on the road working with companies and engineering teams that are actively making the move to the cloud, right? They're not just talking about it. So where are we sort of maybe not so much as an industry, but as operators on that scale of talking about it versus actually moving production workloads?
Yeah, it's a really good question because the first couple of years, so I left AWS in 2015, at the end of 2015, started my company now. And in that time frame, we were working with mostly AWS customers because, as most people know, AWS was first. And, you know, most people that were going into production are really using it. We're using that platform. So in that time frame, we were working with a lot of AWS customers, but not huge enterprises. And that's really my bread and butter. So, you know, the first couple of years was not a lot of enterprises, but the enterprises that were kind of looking into cloud, whether it was Azure or AWS, were just testing. You know, they're doing very basic work. And this past year in 2019, it's been completely different. The enterprises are now, you know, that we're working with are doing real projects and doing more work in Azure than they were in the past couple of years. And so we're still kind of in the enterprise, you know, it's still early. There's still a lot of confusion. There's still a lot of uncertainty. And, you know, it's kind of like I've been telling my friends, it's kind of the Wild West out there when you're working with enterprises, just because, you know, there's so much new stuff. It's not easy to take a traditional application, you know, whether you're lifting and shifting and moving it over or, you know, trying to transform it into something else and use some kind of bleeding edge technology. It's just a lot that goes into it. And I think probably one of the biggest things that enterprises are having a hard time with is just getting started with the governance piece, the security, figuring out the costs and trying to figure all that out. So, you know, looking from the outside in, at the industry, it kind of seems like everyone's crushing it with the cloud. But the reality is most enterprises have a lot of work to do to get really proficient with any cloud provider, whether it's Azure, AWS, or Google.
That's a really interesting point. And I think we all heard a lot about that at Microsoft Ignite this year, where people were asking really technical questions. And I've had a couple of folks say that they were skipping sessions and instead going to that giant Microsoft Meet the Engineers area and just having the conversations that you would normally have after a presentation right there, because they're in the throes of real implementation.
Yeah, we're seeing more of that too. It's really interesting because for many years, you know, the trainings that I was doing were pre-recorded, lots of pre-production and very little interaction with the students. And so now it's kind of flipped. Most of the stuff we do is live and interactive and Q&A because there's so many questions. It's very difficult to answer the questions when you're spending so much time pre-producing content. And there's still many use cases for that, but to your point, it's like there's so many questions in the marketplace that it just, you can't wait long enough to pre-produce content. You have to get in there and just start helping people. So the opportunity has been awesome. And I think that it's going to be like this for a while.
Yeah, that was one of the things that happened in the SolarWinds user community, the FLAC, was that there were a lot of conversations, to your point, about that sort of long tail of really specific questions around it. And so that kicked off a survey, and it turns out that over 50% of the users on the community are actually on Azure, not on AWS. So that enterprises seem to be waiting a little bit more for tooling and process.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is one of the things that I've been talking about a lot lately. If anybody's heard me on another show, you probably heard me say this. But, you know, when I started in IT, it was the 90s. And I had to make a decision in that early time frame of, am I going to go be a Novell expert, a Novell network expert, or am I going to be a NT4 expert? And all of my homies that were a couple of years ahead of me were like, come to NetWare, you know, get your CNE certification, your certified.
It's awesome on Token Ring.
That's right. Yeah. And I just had a gut read on it. I'm just like, I don't know, man. I think that the Windows stuff is cool. So I went down the NT4 path, and then Microsoft came out with Windows 2000 and Active Directory, and then they destroyed Novell. And so I think that if you kind of look at that history, Microsoft is, you know, they're so good at building management interfaces and they're so good at policy. And so from where I'm sitting now, just I think my prediction will be Microsoft will dominate in the enterprise because, you know, they have that background, and they're already starting to do a lot with governance. And in my opinion, you know, they're starting to lead in that area, especially if you look at things like Azure policy.
So
And blueprints and, you know, and the whole RBAC story. And there's like some things like that in other clouds and stuff, but it's Microsoft's proficiency. And since they're already penetrating the enterprise so well, there's tons of Active Directory out there. To me, it's obvious that's where it's going. Happy to eat crow if I'm wrong, but I don't see it happening.
Well, okay, so that brings me to another question, which is, and you certainly have the background for this. Would you say that all cloud providers are exactly the same? They're all created equal, or is it increasingly a little more difficult to really assess how they're different?
Yeah, I think they're very similar. And, you know, terminology aside, if you really get into it, they're all very similar. You know, if you look at AWS and Azure, there's almost complete parity at any given time. Not complete, but nearly, right? Like for like services that all do similar things and just have different names. Now, you know, so I won't say that all cloud providers are the same, but they're all offering similar services, and they all have their own strengths and weaknesses. You know, like Google, their strength is big data, and they've been indexing data for 20 years. They're experts at that, right? And so they're probably going to do well in the big data space compared to the others. AWS has been amazing because they're first. They're good with startups and, you know, non-Microsoft shops, but there's a lot of Microsoft on there. But again, I think Microsoft's going to dominate in the enterprise because of their management capabilities and the policy stuff. But you know, at the end of the day, I think if you get good with one, it's going to be an easier lateral move to another. It's just like, you know, learning PHP and then going and learning JavaScript after that, right? It's like, it's almost...
I'll take JavaScript over PHP.
Yeah, but there's similarities, right? And so it's like, once you know one really well, then it's like, okay, I can pick this up over here because I understand, like, you know, looping and if statements and all this stuff. So I think if you get good with one, it's going to be easier to make a lateral move. And I think what will happen eventually, you know, over the next several years is they will become more commoditized, and like the management layer will be where it's at. You know, it's like people talk about multi-cloud. And so we're going to see, you know, a lot of multi-cloud products come out on the market. And I think whoever can kind of bridge that gap across all the clouds is going to be in a really good spot. And so right now, they're not all identical. They're similar, but that's kind of my feeling on it.
Yeah, it was interesting watching the keynote a few days ago for reInvent, where in terms of whether you're an early or late adopter with cloud, I think AWS is up to 4 now container either delivery or orchestration products. Do you is that kind of differentiation for them maybe a product of those early adopters who have a particular investment in a cloud native service, that coming a little bit later to it means you're more likely to get something that is a second generation implementation or is designed to be easier to use versus easy to get started with?
I think they're all doing a better job of making it easier to get started with. You know, when it comes to AWS, one of the things that they did a little bit differently when they started their container support was they built their own orchestration system. So they have ECS, right? The Elastic Container Service, where you can just go and run your Docker containers. And they got criticized for that in the early days for doing that. And then they created a flavor of hosted Kubernetes or managed Kubernetes called EKS. And so, you know, it kind of depends. I think the managed service route is going to be where everything goes. So they're all going to try to lower the barrier to entry and make it as easy as possible. So, you know, building your own clusters of servers on virtual machines and having to deal with availability and backups is going to become less and less of a concern. And so they're going to slowly manage people, you know, into more managed services. And that's kind of just where I see it going. So I think it's going to get easier going down the road.
So what would you say the biggest problems are for users when they're migrating applications beyond just lift and shift to really take advantage of the services of the cloud?
Yeah, so in terms of like not just lifting and shifting, but transforming into something brand new, like microservices and containers and all that, you know, I think a lot of companies need to be careful. There's been several right now that have, you know, put an enormous amount of resources into things like trying to split up applications into microservices and, you know, trying to do Kubernetes and things like that, which, you know, is great if you have the operational maturity and your engineering team to do that. But, you know, a lot of our customers are mid-size, 500 mm-hmm. users, 1,000 users, 2,000 users. And generally in that type of scenario, the engineering teams aren't, you know, as good as the engineering team at Netflix, you know, so it's
Netflix has as many more employees than some of these businesses do.
Exactly. So I think that people need to be kind of careful with that and really understand, do we have the ability to do this right now? And if you do, great, you know, knock yourself out, see if you can add value by transforming the application, but also not worry about feeling obligated to do it. And I think the second thing too that I would tack onto that is a lot of the companies that we've worked with, well, not a lot, but several have, you know, it's been obvious to us as we got started in projects where they don't really have a clear goal. They just kind of feel obligated to get in the game, and that's great. But I think what companies should focus on is like what's painful and something that's easy to do first, and then get some points on the board, and then, you know, get into transformation of applications to cloud native and all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of
decent visibility, low enough risk, small enough in scope.
Yeah, 100%. You know, like start off with, you know, offsite backups or, you know, something basic just to get the feel for it so you can get your arms around the cost controls, the security, and then crank up the intensity from there. But you got to be honest with yourself, look at your team and realize what can we actually accomplish? Because if you weren't doing microservices and containers before, it's going to be very difficult to pull that off in a quick turnaround timeframe.
Well, I think you also hit a bunch of the points that go to people feeling a little bit nervous about it. And it can't be all gloom and doom and impossible, because the reality is most companies, when they start, pretty quickly accelerate. And then you'll start hearing them say in a believable way that they will be all or majority cloud within a reasonable amount of time. So obviously they are having some success. So do you have any stories maybe that are where a company was surprised at how successful they could be with a migration?
Yeah, we work with a software company that they have to spin up QA environments to test their code, right? Well, they don't have to, but what they were doing in the past, they had a QA environment that's just sitting there. And every time there's a new version of their application, they would push it to that environment. And just kind of having that environment sitting there over time, we all know how it is, right? The server gets beat up over months or years. It's just not the same as it was the day that you installed it. So what we did for them is we created a CI/CD pipeline process for them, to where when their code changes come in, it spins up a staging environment brand new, right? So it's kind of following that immutable infrastructure pattern where we bring up the environment, and we test our code against it, and we delete it. And when it's in production, the idea is if that environment is something messed up, we could just replace it instead of babysitting servers and, you know, logging and doing that kind of stuff. So for them, it was a game changer, because every time they test their application, it's tested against a pristine environment. So we know that there's nothing weird kind of lagging over the last couple months or whatever. And I think that they might have overestimated or underestimated the value in the beginning. And so, you know, a lot of what I think we fight in when working with our customers as an issue, if you dig down into it, usually it's not the technology. A lot of times it's just the human side of not wanting to change. And that's the business that we're in.
Yeah, when you're in the business of high risk of outage, where you're told you absolutely have to maintain as much availability and resiliency as possible, but at the same time you are delivering commodity services in a cost center, that's never a mix for a lot for feeling eager to take a lot of risk.
Right.
So here's a question for you. That aspect of delivering applications, of mitigating risk, especially when you kind of get into those unknowns, I don't know, Rumsfeld quote, that when you start to your point of transitioning application or even just maybe modernizing an app where you're going to take a layer of that application and convert it into microservices, managing the delivery successfully for that application changes a lot. Right? It's not lift and shift. These aren't the same packaged applications that people have been using for a long time with well-established, decade-old management interfaces that you can just connect to. So how are teams adapting to that, to where something that used to be easy to get access to is now opaque, or they've added cloud-native technology that maybe has little or no robust management interfaces for it, where they really are, where ops is almost becoming developers, or at least taking a more dev approach out of necessity. How are they getting over that?
Yeah, it's not easy. It's a big hill to climb if you haven't done that before. And I think even if you're, from an operational perspective, good with containers and supporting cloud native applications, there's still the challenge of how do we, you know, get visibility into what all these services are doing? How do we trace issues, and how do we see what's going on? And, you know, it's honestly a big problem right now. There's products on the market that, you know, aim to solve this problem, and many of them are super effective. People are using them, but I think it's an education challenge, right? And so people have to have coming up front, like, you know, if you're in operations and now you're supporting microservices, if you don't understand the basics of how HTTP works, then you're not going to understand the basics of how are these services interacting together. And that's a core piece before you even get into like installing, you know, monitoring tooling and things like that, in my opinion, because you wouldn't even know necessarily what you're looking at. And so I think one of the bigger challenges is how do we monitor all this stuff when it's so distributed? And, you know, it's an interesting time. And I think that the industry still has to close the gap on that a little bit.
So walk us through an example of what that looks like. If you looked at a regular three-tier application, right? So you've got database, data layer, you've got some business logic behind that, you've got a service layer, and then a firewall, something that would run on-prem, right? Something that we've all delivered for a really long time. How does that application look once you migrate it to cloud with some modernization or transformation? What do those sort of typical first hello production look like when they've migrated?
Yeah, so You know, I think one of the things that people need to do is try to lead with the managed services because that makes it easier. But, you know, if you're taking a typical three-tier application, you're kind of, you can mimic that architecture by going strict, you know, infrastructure as a service and doing virtual machines and all that kind of stuff. That's very difficult to pull off. So to answer your question, it depends on the approach that the company takes. I would like to see a lot more customers try to go down the managed services road because it reduces a lot of the work. A lot of companies don't realize the amount of additional effort that takes place when you're supporting, you know, a large architecture like that and it's all virtual machines. There is a lot of little things to connect together. There's a lot that can go wrong because now you're responsible for high availability and all that kind of stuff. And it's not easy to do. And so, you know, the idea with this would be to make it as easy as possible, go manage service if you can, but sometimes it's a blocker. Sometimes, you know, you need root access to the servers and you don't have, you know, the time to rebuild the application or the way that it works. And so you got to kind of rely on the old school way of doing things. So we see that a lot. We see a lot of people moving virtual machines into the cloud. But then in that model, it's kind of like, well, did you migrate to the cloud or did you just move a server from one data center to the other? And so I think companies need to do a little bit of a better job of focusing on what's the value add in the cloud that we can extract before we just take an architecture, just move it up there, right? And so, you know, the way it would look depends on the cloud. And kind of what technologies they can include. But basically the idea is, you know, especially if you want to like isolate your applications and stuff, and this comes in the conversation regardless of whether you're doing managed or full IaaS, is putting stuff in your own virtual network, just like you would on any virtualization platform, isolating it, and then, you know, deploying your resources into that. And so there's a lot of moving parts depending on the platform that you're talking about. And so, you know, you might be able to mix and match some infrastructure as a service resources with some managed services. You know, maybe you're still running your web applications on VMs, but now your database is a managed service and you don't have to worry about backing that up and patching it because the vendor is doing it for you. So it really depends on the customer. But those are just a couple of thoughts there shooting from the hip.
There's a lot of confusion around multi-cloud and whether that basically just means you're hybrid and you have either multiple instances of the same subscription or you're actually using different providers. And then some people think of that as sort of an agnostic set of platforms with portable services. But is multi-cloud here to stay in whatever form it is? Or do you see customers actually developing gravity around a particular vendor and sticking with it?
Yeah, I think a lot of people that talk about multi-cloud are talking about it in the sense that, hey, we want to like eliminate the vulnerability of going all in on Azure and now we're stuck there. I think, to be honest, like 2020 is not going to be the multi-cloud year for most companies because, you know, most companies aren't even good with one cloud yet. And so it's kind of like, let's get one under the belt and then talk about the other one. And the second thing is it's like the management story, it just isn't there. So if you're doing multiple clouds, like you're literally on your own connecting the stuff together. If you're trying to span an architecture for an application across multiple clouds, you could pull it off, but you're going to be all completely on your own. And there's not going to be right now a management layer necessarily that covers the entire board. You know, there's companies like HashiCorp that are starting to build really cool things that span all these different platforms. You know, like their infrastructure as code solution, Terraform, you can talk to all the cloud providers. You know, they've got service mesh, they've got all kinds of cool stuff. And I think that we'll see them and others kind of come into the market and add some multi-cloud management support. But it's super early, and I don't think that anybody could really pull it off effectively anytime soon. That's just kind of my opinion.
Is a big part of that, especially folks that I speak to, where they discover that they had a whole bunch of shadow IT, they had lots of different accounts, and they're trying to make sense out of that. But it sounds like there's just a lot of experimentation that's going to happen while production has to continue. Is that a big part of what's driving application performance management as a tool versus what would have been a lot more infrastructure maybe bolted directly to a single provider?
Yeah, the what's happening is that all the providers are in this model now where they're competing on how many changes they can make every year, right? So if you go to the annual conference for any of these big providers, they'll tell you how many things they changed that year, how many services they introduced, how many features were in there. And so we're literally in the era of continuous, you know, delivery, right? So these technology companies are building that stuff that way. That's why it's impossible almost to keep up with what's happening every single week, and things are changing in the UI almost every week. And so what's going to happen is customers are going to have to level up, right? Because the technology companies are building their software that way. The solutions that they're building to give to their customers fall into that same kind of paradigm. And so customers are going to have to, you know, start to get into that iterative process of not just standing stuff up and like babysitting it and playing defense for 3 years to like, and then do another project. It's a continuous thing. So the experimentation, like companies are going to have to adopt a learning culture. You know, we talk a lot about this in the world of DevOps, right? Like making it safe to fail and having a learning culture and giving people time to ramp up, all that stuff. If these technology companies are going to pull it off, they're going to have to put pressure on their customers to play up to their level. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, over the next couple of years, how Microsoft, after their own culture transformation, gets their customers to do that. Same thing with AWS and Google. But yeah, that's the game that we're in now. It's try something, measure the feedback, and then let's try to improve it again. And it's every day for the rest of, you know, your career.
Right. So you're going to monitor like an admin, but really you're going to start to think more like a user, and whether that they're actually really delighted by that application, not just meeting an SLA.
Yeah, I think you're going to monitor like an administrator, and then you're going to iterate like a developer, regardless of what you're doing.
All right. So it almost sounds like the winner among clouds, or at least those will be real successful, are the ones that are not just providing technology, but really helping to change that traditional mindset toward a learning culture, toward a faster, smaller delivery. Like, you know, when we talk about DevOps, we talk about Agile. That these are human changes, these are cultural changes, and you know, certainly enterprise and IT in particular has a lot at stake there. So what's a great way to help shift that mindset? Because you can't do it by dictating policies in a team, in a big, broad team meeting. It seems to be a little bit more one-on-one, but how are you seeing that work on the ground?
Well, we're seeing a lot of challenge, to be honest. We're not seeing it work very good, to be honest with you. But what's going to have to ultimately happen is the leadership of the company is going to have to, you know, come in and say, hey, this is the direction that we're going. And then the whole thing with, you know, the finger pointing and the blame game stuff and not working together just slows you down. And we've just seen this so much with our customers. So, you know, these cloud platforms are not going to be as profitable as they possibly could be if their customers can't move as fast as, you know, or at least closer to as fast as they are. The only way to move faster is to increase collaboration and to help people learn faster. And that's going to have to come from senior leadership of companies. So if you're listening to this and you're, you know, an executive, that's what it's going to take. You know, if you want to be successful in cloud and not spend too much money and have happy people that don't quit, like, you're going to have to deliver that. And the people that succeed are going to be good at that. And the ones that pay too much and aren't good at it are going to have a bad culture.
Well, exactly. I think Gartner actually had said that something like 75% of enterprises were going to experience actual visible outages as a result of things like skills gaps, not even what they don't know or maybe experiences that they don't have, but even skills gaps. So if you were rewinding back to today, what skills would you start with in terms of recommending our listeners focus on?
I think probably the best thing to focus on right now is core services. And if you are good with compute, storage, networking, and security, every cloud service is predicated on those four things. So getting started, and if you look at Azure and even AWS, they have really great like entry-level education and certification content. I would get started there and then really focus on how do I become proficient with the four pillar services that everything's predicated on. So how am I going to get good with compute, which is beyond just virtual machines, but also things like serverless functions, things like that, the managed services that are powering some of the Kubernetes services could sometimes be considered compute. But understanding compute, understanding storage, understanding networking, and then understanding the identity and access management piece, the security side, if you're proficient in those areas, then you can move over laterally to something like, you know, a managed SQL implementation and kind of understand what's going on behind the scenes and understand how it's secured and how it integrates with the network. And so that's what I tell all my folks. And when I bring somebody into our team, That's one of the first things if they're going to do, you know, they're coming from an AWS background. Now they're going to do some Azure stuff. It's like, let's get good with these four services in Azure, and then we'll crank up the intensity from there.
But it sounds like those four services, and it would make sense why they're successful, are aligned with skills that a lot of people already have. So really, you're saying that it's basically differences training as much as anything else.
Yeah, it's like, take what you know now, and how does that translate into the cloud? And then once you understand how they're doing it in the cloud, then you can start to go into some of these more nuanced type of services that might seem foreign. But, you know, and that's a good point. A lot of what you know now as an infrastructure person, if you are that, you already know a lot about the cloud. You just have to figure out what they're calling it, how they're implementing it. And it's easy to get intimidated by the breadth of services and all those different things. But the reality is, you know, most people won't tell you this, but I'll tell you this as a quote unquote, you know, cloud expert. You know, I don't know everything and I never will. And I'm super comfortable with, and I love it. And if you can sit there and be like, you know what, I love that new services come out today and I'm constantly confused, then you're going to really enjoy working in the cloud, because nobody else is ever going to know all of it. And even the people that work at these places that I talk to, you know, they know their thing and that's it. So yeah, that's what I would say.
Okay, so we're getting ready to wrap up. And I just wanted to bring this back to tools that are helpful, in particular application performance management. Why don't we use that as an example of taking skills that you already have. If you are used to looking at, let's say, page delivery time or components and sort of managing what's coming from a CDN versus what's coming out of the JSON services API versus the front end, for example, in an application, where you would typically rely on infrastructure monitoring behind the scenes, how do you adapt that to that type of APM for cloud?
Yeah, I think you have to be tuned in to what it is, you know, which cloud platform you're using. So let's take Azure for an example, since, you know, based on your survey, most of the folks that you guys are talking to are Microsoft focused. When you look at Azure, the platform itself has a native monitoring service. So Azure Monitor, which is, you know, really tying in lots of different capabilities. But at the basic level, for traditional infrastructure, you're going to have, you know, the core metrics that you would always expect to see, you know, things like CPU utilization and memory and disk performance, all that kind of stuff in some different ways, depending on the type of service you're looking at. So there's kind of that built-in stuff. You can also customize it. And then from an application perspective, you know, if you're building web apps and so on, you know, at the application layer in the Microsoft world, they have something called Application Insights, which is an insanely cool telemetry and application performance monitoring service where you can get lots of insights into, you know, everything that's happening with the application, requests that are coming in, and is your service throwing errors, all that kind of stuff. The one thing I will say, though, is those services have been kind of a moving target, right? So the different capabilities are coming in. The core stuff is there, like the basics of how do we monitor the core infrastructure, the stuff that we've always monitored, you know, like AWS has CloudWatch and Azure has Azure Monitor. But when you start getting into more of these, you know, newer type of services and newer ways of doing things, that's going to require, you know, some updates to the way that we've done things in the past. So if you haven't, you know, supported a web application in the cloud, you might get sucked into something like Application Insights, or you might get pulled into something like AWS X-Ray to kind of get in the depths of application performance monitoring there. So it really depends on the platform that you're on, the application that you're supporting. If you're doing like traditional VMs and stuff, you know, there's great support in the monitoring systems, and even if you're doing custom applications. But you have to know what platform you're on and what tools and services are available in that platform, because it's going to be different, very different from one to the other.
So in terms of application delivery, and especially application performance management, it sounds like you're saying that we're, as a set of practitioners, maybe we are a little behind in terms of our expectations for parity with capability of tools, but that vendors are making a lot of strides toward best-of-breed solutions, integrated solutions, and ones that are a lot easier to get started with for managing applications.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, you know, kind of going back to what I said earlier, you know, as time goes on, the cloud platforms are going to continue to become more and more commoditized, and the people building services on top of, you know, something that can work across all of them are going to win. And so whether that's management, whether that's performance monitoring, whether it's, you know, some kind of single pane of glass for some other thing that we're not even thinking of yet, I think those companies providing those tools and services have a huge opportunity. You know, because right now, if you're looking at a lot of this stuff, like, you know, especially if you look at, you know, Azure, right? And just taking them to, because we've been talking about them a lot, right? They have their own native monitoring solutions. But if you really do start dabbling in multi-cloud, then you're going to need something that can talk to the other clouds, right? So there's a huge opportunity there. And I think that it's also going to give people maybe even more depth into, you know, the things that they're monitoring, the different management strategies that are putting into place. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch things unfold.
Well, awesome. Mike, as we get ready to wrap up here, is there any last piece of advice that you might want to share with the audience about assuring that the applications that you're delivering well right now on-prem are also going to be make people happy once you've migrated them over to cloud?
Yeah, and I think my advice might seem kind of weird for folks, but I'm going to throw it out there anyways. My advice would be to start looking for ways to become a better communicator and become more conscious of what the people you're working with are actually seeing. Because going back to some of the things we've talked about, the absolute number one thing that I struggle with when I work with companies is the human side. And if we can get to a place where, you know, you can actually consider someone else's point of view before you make a snap judgment and those types of things, it's going to be a lot better off. So that's my biggest thing. And then also, you know, as a practitioner, as things continue to evolve, you know, the skills are going to continue to be more and more commoditized as well. So, you know, at some point, the way for you to really add value and stand out is not going to be because you're such a great technologist. It's going to be because you're such a great communicator.
Well, that's great. And that's also all the time that we've got today. And if you'd like to learn more about APM tips and tricks or how to be successful managing your hybrid multi-cloud environments, be sure to check out the Orange Matter blog. It's full of expert insights and guidance. Thanks for joining us on SolarWinds Tech Pod, Mike. It was great to have you.
Thanks a lot. It was really great to be here. Appreciate it.